Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Is the private practice physician a dinosaur, or at least in decline? Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explorers. Our guest today is Dr. Elizabeth Wood, who was a graduate of Earlham College and has had a long and distinguished career here where we're broadcasting today in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Just three questions, Doctor, and you can answer them in any order, or I'll interrupt and remind you that there are the questions. The first one is the private practice physician a dinosaur? Is it in decline? If so, what values have we lost? And finally, what's replacing it? Subset of that is, are these values going to be retained in the future? Let's start with the decline. Is it in decline, do you think?
Yes.
Next question. What values have we lost in the past?
We've lost the close physician-patient relationship, where the physician had the privilege and the reward of getting to know the patients and their families well, and to be able to look at the whole picture rather than just the fragmented parts of the specialist. The specialists definitely have their place in medicine. But I think we're losing the total picture of taking care of the patient and the family. Yes, there's still family practitioners, but they are increasingly limited in what they are able to provide. In the as specialists have developed through the years, we now have hospitalists, which only take care of the patient in the hospital. And under the best scenarios, there is good communication between the LMD, the local medical doctor, or the primary care doctor, and the hospitalist. But in reality, that's not happening. And so we have people that present to the emergency room and are admitted, and the family doctor may not know until they've been discharged, the medicines have been rearranged, and they may not get a summary for a few weeks. Now, this shouldn't happen in the day of technology where we have instant communication with computers, but in actuality, it does.
Yeah. So that it's a partial view that you get now, and it doesn't give you the whole picture that you had as a private practice physician.
The other problem is that patients go to a different specialist for a different problem. And so you have many cooks stirring the stew. And there are many problems with drug interactions. Yeah. Patients don't always know what they're taking or why they're taking it. And physicians don't always know what you're taking or why you're taking it.
If there's no communication, you might be taking one drug that is poisonous when taken with another drug.
Yes, that's true. Drug interactions are a serious problem.
And no one will ever, it's unlikely that someone will see that because the local physician might not have gotten the information. And the patient would not be able to tell you because they don't know the names of those drugs.
Well, and the other thing that happens is that as people get into the specialty circuit, they may not drift back to the gatekeeper. Yeah. That was the role that was given to the primary care physician when all this was conceived. But again, in actuality, the gatekeeper may not be at his gate.
Yeah. Before I ask you what brought this change about, in your own practice, how many people did it take? It isn't just you and the door and a table and a stethoscope. You still had to have some people who were your assistants just to make a kind of a holistic approach to the patient. You had to have secretaries and receptionists and maybe a nurse or two.
You knew a few of them.
I did, thank you. We won't go into those stories now. They're all happy.
Well, when we came to Gettysburg 50 years ago, I started practice with Dal Radzma, and Dal Radzma had an office staff at that time of a receptionist and two nurses. And when I came, it stayed as a receptionist and two nurses. And as the practice, he had a very large practice, and he was quicker than I was, so he saw more people in the time span than I did. But as time went on, we divided the practice somewhat, and I had one nurse working for me who was a nurse receptionist. And that was probably in 1971 or two. We were in the basement of Annie Warner Hospital. And we had two rooms and a little alcove that we shared with the tumor clinic. when I left practice in 96, we had at least eight or nine mm-hmm. people.
Already it was getting more and more complicated.
Yes.
You mentioned that you do not object to specialization, and you were referred to specialists all the time. What makes the difference? Was it that you kind of kept them on a short leash? You would get reports back and forth, and when you would see people the next time around, you'd pretty well know what had happened?
Well, I was fortunate. I practiced in the nostalgic good old days before the days of HMOs and managed care.
Yeah. Okay.
And so through the years, I developed a core of specialists that I could communicate with that I thought did a good job, and there was instant communication back. It was called the telephone, and we would talk to each other. And we would also verify that with letters, of course. And then came managed care. And this area was very slow, very tardy in getting into the managed care, but it came. And if you signed up to work, to agree to the terms of an insurance company, then you agreed to use their stable of physician specialists. Well, we're not all equal, despite the Constitution. And some of us are stronger in some areas than others. And I didn't always agree with being told who I had to send my patients to. So I was probably one of the last. I was also told that if I agreed to accept an insurance company, then I had to accept all their patients. And there's a limit to how many passengers you can put on a boat before it sinks.
Yeah, and you'd like to give personal care to your patients. The medical issues involved in leaving the private practice. The big one you've mentioned so far is the misuse of drugs. Are there some others? Are things missed? What are the medical issues? Not the financial or other difficulties, but the medical issues. Drugs is top of the list, I'm sure. Misuse of prescriptions.
I think there's also a misuse. I think what's happened in medicine is there's been a loss of a good history taking. The physician does not sit down and ask all the questions of a review assistant. Now, this is old-fashioned medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You're given a questionnaire. Do you have any trouble breathing?
Right.
What color is your urine? You know, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just yes or no, short answer questions.
Yeah.
That's given to you by someone in the office. There are fewer and fewer people with trained clinical skills within the offices. They are now people who handle insurance claims, who make sure that your insurance coverage will let you go see Dr. X for Y, whether that is an approved situation. This is a lot of hype has said this is blamed on Medicare and single payer. That's the farthest thing from the truth there is.
We're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Wood, who is a private physician in private practice, rather, here in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, for almost her entire career, about the subject of the decline of the private practice and the loss of values which follow therefrom, and what may be replacing it. As you probably could tell at the beginning of this podcast, we're podcasting before a very live audience at St. James Lutheran Church, as we do once or twice a year, thanks to their invitation. And when our podcast is over, we'll have a further discussion with Dr. Wood about the question she's raised, something that you could do with this podcast with your family or with your group when after you've finished listening to this discussion. What has replaced it? HMOs, managed care. More important right now, I think, for us is what values might we... Is there any value we're gaining from the new system?
Oh, I think we've made some gains. We do have... We do have a lot more technology and equipment and expertise at our instant exposure. We have communication within corporate medicine for more sophisticated care. Little Adams County, Little Gettysburg has the ability to pick up the phone and call York and have excellent cardiac care or neurosurgical care in York. That's true. We communicate with Hershey and Harrisburg. But within a corporation, you also lose the personalization. And that's the trade-off. I think sometimes, and this is probably going to raise some feathers, but I think sometimes we prolong the duration of life for the quality of life. We forget the dignity of the individual. And I think when I look back 55 years ago as a medical student, we hated to see a patient die. We felt so bad that we had failed.
It was a failure.
And I think that continues somewhat.
Yeah. This is self-serving. The doctor and the minister in the community were the best educated and the best paid. Well, let's get to the question of the decline of resources for the private practice. Was that an issue before you left? I mean, it was a declining income for the amount of people you would see and the amount of effort you were putting in, amount of skill you had.
Well, I'm probably not the person to ask. And I say that because I was never the breadwinner in our family. Okay. I didn't have to make a living to send my kids to college. I had a spouse to do that.
He's next on this program. What's it like to be married to a physician all your life? That'll be two programs at least.
I don't think you want to go there.
Okay. But at any rate, has that been the... I'm looking at what are the reasons why the new technological age has replaced private practice. It's replaced everything, including in the preparation for ministry. So we've got a universal question.
It is a universal question. And now we're getting into social and political questions. And
all
it's
right.
A fact that we have the 1% the less than the 1% at the top, and the rest of us sort of stayed where we are, where the gap kept increasing.
Are there efficiencies, however, in having something like a WellSpan or an HMO over having private practice? I mean, as far as profit-taking is concerned, or just decent living for physicians and nurses. And
well, you know, I don't know how they really do it.
You don't. It's smoke and mirrors. Again, I'll ask someone else, right? Was that the argument?
As far as this efficiency is concerned, I think it depends on how you're looking at the picture. As far as the patient's concerned, I think they are best served by one person who knows it all or finds out, takes the responsibility to finding out what the picture is. With the corporation, there's always somebody down the line who gets asked to pick up the ball. Mm-hmm. And if the ball isn't picked up, then it's dropped. I mean, there are stories of misinformation getting on your medical record. It's computerized. Try to get that off. It's very, very hard to get that off your record.
So if I'm going to a doctor today, what would be the thing I should really look for and ask or insist on so that I get proper care? How do I retain the values of the old system in the new system, which obviously is not going to be reversed?
I think you want to find a physician who will look in your eye and who will talk to you instead of spending all his time on the keyboard and doesn't even realize that, oh, maybe you're slipping a little bit. There's gravy on your shirt, you know, or your shoes are scuffed up. Something has happened since you were in here last. But if you've never looked at the person, you don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you do find a lot of things by questioning a patient that you don't find necessarily in filling out the form out in the office with the receptionist?
Well, again, this is the old school speaking.
That's why you're here. Thank you.
At the University of Wisconsin, which was my medical school, emphasis on the history was tantamount. We were always taught that 95% of any diagnosis came from the history and just the observation of watching the patient walk into the room.
And if that's lost in this new system, all the specialization that we have is not going to fully recover for that.
I don't think so.
Yeah. But we will be getting better heart care, better back surgeries, better neurological procedures. My goodness, there's some wonderful things going on in the last 30
years. There are wonderful things going on.
Amazing.
Lots of powerful drugs and procedures and things going on, but the death rate of the white population has decreased since the recession. So there are other things going on. There's socioeconomic things that are going on that medicine isn't going to cure.
Yeah,
there's no real panacea. We keep looking for it, but I guess the closest panacea would be immune therapy for cancer.
And you've raised a big issue we can talk about at another time, and that is the ability of modern medicine to prolong life without raising the question of the quality of life. And that still is to be resolved. And you'd come down on the side of looking at the quality of life maybe first?
Yes.
Certainly the top of the list?
Top of the list.
We've gone this whole time, and you haven't said a word about how everybody looks in this room, especially.
Oh, they all look great.
Yeah.
You look super.
Do I have any spots on my tie today?
I didn't see any spots. This is a pretty good room.
We've been talking to Dr. Elizabeth Wood about the decline of the private care physician. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.